Hello, everybody, and welcome to the sixth episode of Retail Ramblings. We're continuing to push on and having a look at the current happenings in the world of retail. What we'll do to begin with on our episode today is have a look at our last episode, so episode 5, and just recap some of the topics of discussion that we had. So for our winners and losers on the DIY side, we had our winner as Compact Power Equipment after their acquisition by the Home Depot, which was a really big win for them. And our loser was Sears, who we continually mention, and Kenmore Appliances, their Kenmore Appliances brand after their purchase from Amazon. There was definitely some positivity to the acquisition by Amazon, but after Marsh's discussion, we ultimately came to the conclusion that they were the big loser for the week.
Yep, and on the winner side of things, we had CoverGirl as our winner for having a really loyal customer base and doing a really great job of engaging these customers with their promotions and online. And on the loser side of things, we had Revlon. So they've been struggling over the last quarter. Their shares have gone down, and they're kind of blaming it on decreased foot traffic and department stores and overall sales decline in the U.S. But we really think that's, you know, that's, there's no excuse for that in today's day and age, and innovation really has to be at the top of their game. So on the retail roadmap side of things, we took a look inside the change rooms of some of our favorite retailers, and taking a look at how they're using data to gather information about what customers are looking for and what kinds of products should be brought on shelves.
Yeah, definitely. And the last thing that we did for the data dive was actually look at something that was really interesting. So it was it is an organization called Cloverleaf, and we discussed their shelf point technology. So basically it was looking at technology that is digitizing advertising on the shelf face of shelves. And there was some really interesting points and points of discussion that me and Marsha spoke about and talked about the future of retail in an area that hasn't necessarily had a great deal of innovation in the past. So let's get into our retail winners and losers for this particular week.
So we're going to kick it off with our winner and loser in the DIY section of this podcast. So I'm going to kick it off with the winner. So this summer, the hurricane season has really been in the news and on top of everybody's minds.
Yeah, it feels like there's a new hurricane every week, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, you know, brands really have to step up. And I want to speak about a few winners this week who I think have really done a great job stepping up to the plate and helping bring some relief to these disasters. So both Lowe's and Home Depot have announced similar sorts of efforts. So they've both in total have committed more than $2 million following the major flooding and damage caused by some of these weather disasters. So, I mean, I think that's to be expected, and it's really amazing to see these corporations step up. In terms of some brands who I think really deserve a shout out on this episode, I think Duracell is one of them. So Duracell representatives actually handed out free batteries to help those impacted by the hurricanes. And the batteries brand's disaster relief program is called Power Forward, and it's been helping communities recover from natural disasters since the program was kicked off in 2011. Bass Pro Shop has actually donated $40,000 worth of supplies. So those are for rescue efforts to the American Red Cross. And they've also included 100 boats in that to help with relief efforts. And I know we're talking about the DIY side of things, but as I was doing my research for this, it was actually really interesting to see that some beauty brands have also jumped on board. So Ulta Beauty, for example, has donated funds. They're also looking after their employees who are in affected areas and facing unforeseen financial hardships. Sunday Riley was another brand that really stepped up. They used Facebook to let their fans know that team members were safe and that the company would donate $10,000 through the American Red Cross. So overall, I just want to say, you know, brands are really taking a new turn. And customers no longer expect just a quality product. They're expecting a brand to have an identity. They want the brands that they buy from to have humanity and really to have a purpose in society. So brands like the ones that I mentioned here, they're really showing that they're having a positive impact on society, and they're using their name and their capabilities for the good of others. So by setting aside their profit and consumerism, consumers are even more dedicated to the brand when they see that the brand is dedicated to them. So I think all of these brands deserve a shout out in our winners this week.
Yeah, definitely. And it's great to see that it moving beyond profits and purely making money, and people really rallying around a really important cause, because we obviously know the amount of destruction and the amount of hardship that's going on, particularly down south in places like Houston and Florida as well. So to see these brands kind of put their motives to the side for the better of human society, basically, is a really, really good thing to see, and a really great winner, I think, for this episode, Marsha.
Yeah.
So on the loser side of things, we're going to jump over to somebody we mention every few episodes, it seems. And for the amount of times that we mention them as losers, you'd probably think that they're one of the worst retailers in North America, but they actually do a fantastic job, and it is the Home Depot. The reason that the Home Depot is a loser for this particular episode is they've actually been singled out to pay a $5.7 million civil penalty for selling and distributing previously recalled consumer products.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. It's a big one. It's a really big one. And I think the money is important, but it's even more worrying about the actual products that have been recalled. But before I actually go into the products that were recalled, the crux of what occurred was that they failed to accurately identify, quarantine, and prevent the sale and distribution of the recalled products. So basically, the products recalled, the Home Depot failed to adequately identify them, quarantine them, and prevent them getting back out on shelves and being resold. So what makes this all even worse on the Home Depot side is that in 2015, they issued a press release notifying of the post-recall sale. So they took these recalled products back, put them back on shelves, then put a press release saying that we've put them back out on shelves, but then continued to sell them up until 2016.
Oh, man.
So just a litany of errors, really, and testament maybe to the fact that their inventory control was probably not to the level that they required. Some of the products that were affected, and it's actually quite worrying, we had products that were recalled and resold included step ladders, which is bad, portable generators. But the ones that are really worrying is smoke alarms and carbon monoxide alarms, fire extinguishers, washing machines, and I know that can lead to flooding, and dehumidifiers. Dehumidifiers was a big one, and they're grey-produced dehumidifiers that are actually branded as Kenmore and GE products, and there are other brand names that are grey dehumidifiers that were recalled that were actually involved in 450 fires, and they paid out $19 million in damages themselves for these dehumidifiers. So the Home Depot actually took these back in and then resold these particular products, which is really, really worrying. From the repercussion side of things, so the Home Depot obviously needs to pay the $5.7 million fine, but they also need to maintain a program to ensure compliance with the Consumer Product Safety Act. And they need to ensure that they're initiating a program that allows the appropriate disposal of recalled products. I want to discuss a couple of other notable recalls that have happened in the past. So Best Buy was fined $3.8 million. I think it was in 2016, which included grey humidifiers as well. And a really worrying one was Meijer in 2014 was charged $2 million after selling recalled products between 2010 and 2011, which included Infantino Sling Rider baby slings that were responsible for 3 deaths in 2009. So something that's really, really scary to see the repercussions of if these products are resold. A couple of things I want to bring up, Marsha, and we obviously are interested in the brand side of things. So it's important to think of the repercussion for brands whose products have been recalled and then are resold, and the continual negative impact that has for the brand image. So companies like GE and Kenmore, they want to get these products off shelves as quickly as possible, right? They don't want to keep them out there. And it's really disappointing to see Home Depot let the brands down with their lack of control over inventory and subsequently create a really bad brand impression and a bad brand experience with brands like GE and Kenmore. And it kind of stresses the importance of, as well, of having inventory and control and making sure that you're able to see where all your inventory is, where all your products are, and as a brand and as a vendor, being able to take proactive control over your own recall products and make sure that they're not heading back out onto shelves.
Yeah, I think these are some really great lessons learned for the Home Depot and any other brand in the space that's watching what happened. I think there's some key takeaways that you went through that the Home Depot and other brands can use to make sure that it doesn't happen to them.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully the Home Depot doesn't feature as a loser anytime soon again.
Yeah. So next up, we're going to jump into our cosmetic side of the podcast, and I'll kick it off with the winner this week. So the winner that I've selected is Fenty Beauty, and they've had a really amazing launch in the past few weeks. So Fenty Beauty is, for those of you that don't know, it's a brand by Rihanna, it's a full makeup line.
Marsha, you love your celebrity brands, don't you?
I really do. I love to follow that stuff. I just think it's so exciting. But I only give credit to the ones that I think are doing something innovative and interesting and aren't just using their name.
Okay.
So let me tell you, Chris, what Rihanna has did here. So it is a full makeup line, but the focus of it is really skin, and really it's foundation that's at the core of this line. So Fenty Beauty actually has 40 different shades of foundation, which is like, there are other brands that have a number of foundation shades as well. But what Rihanna has done that's been really brilliant is to feature on inclusivity. So all of the campaigns leading up to the launch of this have featured people from all different backgrounds and all kinds of different skin tones, ranging from super pale all the way to really dark skin tones. So with these 40 shades that they've introduced, there's really a shade for everyone. The highlighter is also super popular. To make sense of the whole collection, Rihanna has honed in on her own three-step beauty routine that she uses. So that's been the inspiration for Fenty Beauty. And that all starts with a soft matte base. So with that, obviously there's the 40 shades of foundation, but before that there's a primer. And there's also a really great powder that follows the whole beauty trio. So these products are sold in Sephora, also in Harvey Nichols in Ireland and United Kingdom. And then the third retail channel that they're using is, of course, online. So it's online with international free shipping on orders of $150 or more. So overall, I think it's definitely a winner because they've had just such a great launch. They've made such a splash on social, and the products themselves have been getting amazing reviews so far from what I've seen and just from friends that have used it. I'm really excited to try it out myself. And we all know that customer reviews are huge in the makeup space. So congratulations to Rihanna on Fenty Beauty.
Marsha, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on the importance of inclusivity in cosmetics, because I know it's a big trend at the moment. And it's something that a lot of brands are trying to achieve. How important is it for your brand in the cosmetic space to really stress inclusivity?
It's major. I think right now the three big things in beauty are cruelty-free. People really look for that, and we've seen some companies shoot themselves in the foot and losers.
Hey, we had a previous episode on that one, so that's a really good one.
So cruelty-free, natural, organic is another huge buzzword and something that both brands are really on top of, and retailers like Sephora are really pushing the brands to really step up in that regard. And then thirdly, inclusivity. You know what, in this day and age with the amount of diversity that we have in North America, there's really no excuse for a brand not to be inclusive. And really, like, it's such a win for brands that are inclusive and that showcase that through their promotions and through their social. It's just it sets a great impression with customers.
And even from a marketing perspective, it opens up your market, right?
Absolutely.
So you're not singularly identifying one single market and trying to target those. It allows you to target diverse markets, different skin tones, different skin colors, and it really allows you to leverage your brand across all these different categories. So it is a really, really important thing.
Yeah, and it seems like such a simple thing, but not a lot of brands have stepped up yet. So really exciting to see Rihanna take the lead here.
Yeah, definitely. So let's jump across to the loser for this particular episode. And our loser on the cosmetic side is L'Oreal. So I'm probably going to ruin some of the names here, but because there's a few chemicals and stuff that I'm going to have to quote. But basically what L'Oreal has done is they've been accused of infringing on a patent from a religious group. They're called the Theresian Carmelites, around the use of a cosmetics formula called nucleoside adenosine. Okay, so I'm pretty sure I've said that right.
All right.
Now, the religious group is seeking damages based on the fact that they held the patent for nucleoside adenosine. And this particular formula is found in wrinkle erasing creams. Now, the basis of the complaint was the formula was patented in 2002 after two University of Massachusetts medical students found the topical application of the chemical could enhance the skin's condition. So the patent was found in 2002, was acquired by the Theresians in 2008, but L'Oreal actually tried to acquire it in 2002, 2003 and failed, but went ahead and used the technology anyway. So L'Oreal's under a lot of pressure, obviously, for stealing the technology, but they're also under a great deal of pressure because of what the Theresians stand for. So, or the Carmelites, I should say, stand for. So they use the profits from their skincare product for charitable work and money for the poor. The owner himself is actually a former monk. So in 2010, when the religious group was actually scaling up their product and seeing a lot of success with their product, L'Oreal released the product using the same formula. So the religious group subsequently wasn't able to pay their mortgage on some of their property that they owned and execute on planned charitable activities. So it sounds almost like this Orwellian kind of big brand taking out the small guy. Really,
yeah, for sure.
Really, really negative thing. Now, L'Oreal is actually in another dispute with a small brand over stolen technology as well called Olaplex, which their product protects hair during bleaching. Olaplex are claiming that L'Oreal engaged in similar behavior and that they allegedly stole and marketed the formula used by Olaplex originally. So the big thing to come out of this for me, Marcia, is the importance of patents for cosmetics brands and how important that actually is. But also, we talked about it with the Home Depot as our loser on the DIY side, but how bad negative press is for brands such as L'Oreal, and it's even more stark in the cosmetic space, where every little mistake can make the difference between your brand and another one, where it's in a hyper competitive environment.
It's so interesting to see like all of these brands are just being scrutinized by media, by customers. It's crazy the day and age we live in now.
Yeah, definitely, and it also stretches upon to the sales team as well, and understanding what their company's products are made of and where their products are sourced from. That cannot be understated. So anybody out in the field doesn't need to just simply push their product and say it is a good product. There needs to be a why, and there needs to be those out in the field knowing what type of chemicals are in their product. And you mentioned natural and organic as a major trend. That is imperative for a brand to be really successful and for field reps and sales reps as well to be really successful out in the field. So another episode of Winners and Losers has passed, and now we jump across to the retail roadmap. So looking at where retail is moving in the future and having a little bit of a look at data and technology and how that is important in where retail is going. So we're going to have a look at experiential in retail today. So experiential is a really important concept, and it doesn't just go into retail, but it also stretches across a whole set of different business disciplines. But experiential in retail is basically blending the act of shopping with the art of experience. So we as consumers, and Marcia, I speak for myself, and I'm sure you're probably the same, but we prefer to touch and try and interact with goods before committing to them. And this has always been
that's totally me.
Yeah, it's been a really negative point of online for quite some time. And with the advent of online, we often talk about how promising it is, but there's that one area that they can never compensate for is being able to actually physically touch the product. So experiential is about appealing to all five senses and making sure that your brand in bricks and mortar is appealing to all five senses. So why is experiential important? got a few different reasons why it is such a massive thing at the moment. And the first is the fact that bricks and mortar still controls sales in retail. And we discussed this last week about omnichannel and how important it is to have an aligned strategy. But I can't remember the exact number that we quoted last week, but a huge percentage of sales are still happening in brick and mortar stores. So for that to continue to occur and for brands to continue to leverage their bricks and mortar presence, they need to change their strategy behind how they appeal to customers. Consumers today are spending a lot of money on experience, right? There's statistics to show that millennials have said 52% of their holiday spending would go on experience-related purchases, and that just looks at holiday spending, right? So traditionally, you would look at money being spent in products and on hotels and kind of just staying there, but now experience is such a massive thing. People are social shoppers today. Millennial shoppers are more social than any generation before them, and women between 18 to 34 consider shopping to be a social activity. So it's not just about going into your store, buying your product and leaving. It's about having an experience when you go into store.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, it's so great. I mean, even shopping with friends or even alone, but being able to interact with associates and really get recommendations for the best products.
Yeah, definitely. And from a branding perspective, experiential is really important as well. I read a great article which talked about Instagram-worthy moments and how important they actually are. You're more likely to get more likes when you talk about who you're with and what you're doing as opposed to bragging about what you bought, right? Yeah. And that's a massive thing in today's retail environment. The expectations we have as consumers has changed. So we're now violently averse to inauthenticity, and we want to see authentic experiences from stores. We don't want to just go in and see us trying to be sold to. We want to immerse ourselves in what the brand stands for and what the brand is about. And the last reason that experiential is so important is from an economics perspective. Not having the joy of shopping, it risks your product becoming a commodity. And when it becomes a commodity, you're purely competing with Amazon, and nobody can really beat Amazon at the moment. They just have a superior supply chain. They have reduced costs, which makes them almost completely uncompetitive in the sense that you can't keep up with them. So some brands that are doing experiential really well include Whole Foods, who have cooking classes, juice bars and coffee bars, and consultations with nutritionists in store. And I'm sure this is going to only improve with Amazon taking over Whole Foods.
Yeah, for sure.
The House of Vans, so the brand Vans and their House of Vans in London, where they have a 300,000 square foot building with a cinema, a cafe, a live music venue, an art gallery, but really understanding what their product is and who their market is. They also have a concrete ramp, a street course, and mini ramp for both skateboarding, BMXing, all other types of extreme sports to actually do in the van store. So they don't want to necessarily encourage people just to buy products, but to actually go in there and immerse themselves in what the brand stands for. So if we have a look at what makes implementation or a good implementation of an experiential experience, there's five main things. So it's about having an interactive process, so making sure that your brand interacts with your consumers out there, having an original idea and making sure that it's not something that's been repeated, really connecting and personalizing with your consumers, having an element of unexpectedness, and being really reliable in the way that you're making sure that this is going to work, because the relationship that you have with your retailer as a vendor, even trying to implement something with experiential is really, really important. The last thing I want to have a quick chat about is, what does this all mean for brands, right? We talk a lot about retailers, but what does it mean for a brand? How experiential is your brand is probably the important question to ask. What does your product stand for? What can you communicate with your packaging and when you're in store about what your product stands for? Going one step further, it's looking at how you can collaborate with retailers and seeing how you could maybe adjust an end cap to make it more experiential. Retailers want to get involved with this as well, right? It's not like that they don't want to keep up with the current trends that are going on. And you as a vendor being proactive about it shows that you're really in tune with the trends that are happening today. And the last part that I'll chat about for brands is making sure that you've got information and data to back it up. What makes a good implementation of experiential, as I mentioned before, is making sure that it's reliable, making sure that you can prove that it's going to be effective. And as a vendor, you need to make sure that you have the ability to see how effective your promotions are and what the difference is with creating something that's a little bit more experiential.
Yeah, I think these are all really great points, Chris. And I think, like, you kind of alluded to this, really, like, showcasing what you're doing with Experiential and really, like, proving that you're going to be a partner with this to your merchants and using data to show your case for why this is something interesting and why they should really come on board with it. I think that's super important for brands.
Yeah, and I can even think of it anecdotally. Think of the amount of opportunities that you'd have as a vendor selling to a consumer like myself, going into Walmart and seeing an end cap that really got you involved with the brand, right? It'd stand head and shoulders above what your expectation is going into a place like Walmart. So it's a really exciting trend. There's a lot of trends that we've already discussed that are really exciting, but I really think that this is gonna change the face of retail going forward. If it hasn't already, I can again think of many times where I'm going into store now and it's a lot less about the product I'm buying, and a lot more about the brand that I'm buying.
So to round out this episode of Retail Ramblings, we're gonna jump into the data dive. So here we're gonna talk about a company that's used data effectively in retail, how they used it and what they used it for. So today I wanna speak about actually the trend of consumers increasing taste for natural and environmentally friendly products. So we talked about this briefly in the cosmetics section, and it really makes its way over to CPG as well, which it just makes a lot of sense. So two of the biggest consumer packaged goods makers have unveiled separate deals to acquire small companies that are catering to this trend. And it's all based on data. You know, they're looking at what's effective and what's not. And this is kind of showing that they need to be playing more in this field of natural and environmentally friendly products. So the first of those brands is Unilever. So they recently acquired organic herbal tea business Puka Herbs Limited. Don't know if I'm saying that correctly.
You know what? I think they may even be Australian. I'm actually doing a very quick Google search.
Go for it.
And seeing where they're from. But I guess that's with all organic brands. You kind of see them on the shelf and you think, oh, they're from my country or my city. But they're probably not. But anyway, go
on. So yeah, while you look into that, so yeah, that's Unilever. And then Nestle has actually announced that they're purchasing a brand called Sweet Earth, which is a plant-based food company that offers products based on tofu, seitan, and other plant matter. And really the purchases that I just spoke about are the latest in a raft of acquisitions in the CPG sector, all driven by shifting consumer preferences, which are putting enormous pressure on the industry's traditional giants. So a couple stats that I found really interesting. In the US, unit sales of CPG items have dipped 0.4% in the year that ended on February 19th. They've also had flat annual average growth rate between 2013 to 2016, according to a study of actual purchases from a panel of 110 million US households by market. So sales actually rose slightly by 0.5% to nearly $760 billion compared to an annual average of increase of 1.8% in the last 3 years through 2016. So this is all done based on a study done by RI Data. So based on this information, CPG giants have responded by cutting costs, by redesigning some of their products, and acquiring startups and higher growth labels, like the two examples that we just spoke about. And Procter & Gamble, for example, has actually cut its portfolio of 170 brands down to 65 labels. So I was really shocked to hear this. I knew that they were doing some cutting and I did see some consolidation. I didn't realize the magnitude. So that was super interesting to me. So their big name brands now kind of include Tide Detergent, Pampers, and Gillette. So those are the big ones, but they've cut it down from 170 to 65. I think that's super important to note.
It's a huge trend at the moment, SKU rationalization. I think brands are realizing that it's not about the sheer number of products you have and your presence on shelf, but how good your product actually is and how you resonate with your consumer. We're talking about experiential in the last section. Like it's so much more now. There's an emphasis on how you connect with your consumer, how you're really driving sell-through through your brand as opposed to simply just by having a lot of products on shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a big discussion point to have when you're having your meetings with merchants and you're having your line reviews, you know, really being honest about the performance of your category and the performance of the specific SKUs that you have and working together to figure out, you know, what's going to be effective going forward. And if something that you're pitching is potentially replacing a competitor product on shelf, you really have to make a case for why your product should be the one that's chosen.
Yeah.
So data really comes into that.
Definitely. And I mean, is that all you've got on that section there, Marsha?
Yeah, a little bit of a short section, but I think it was really packed with some of those stats there.
I was just going to add, I couldn't actually find out where, I'm going to say Pucker Herbs is from. So if anybody does know it, who is listening to this podcast, please either drop me an email or put it in the comments so everybody else can see on iTunes or any other platform.
Yeah, that would be amazing. If you left that in our reviews, we would love to know.
Yeah, we want to see where they've come from because I have no idea. And I hope they're Australian, but they're probably not. So the end has come for another episode of Retail Ramblings. Just wrap up very quickly what we touched on today. So on our DIY side with the winners and losers, we had a look at brands and retailers and their responses to weather disasters happening particularly in the Americas. And our loser was Home Depot and the $5.7 million payout that they are obliged to pay due to some recall products that they continue to sell. On the cosmetic side, we had Rihanna and Fenty and their release of an inclusive-driven product line, and our loser was L'Oreal and their apparent theft of a formula used in an anti-wrinkle cream by a religious group. On the retail roadmap, we had a look at experiential in retail. The data dive focused on CPG brands using data to cater to the increasing taste for natural and environmentally friendly products. So that's everything we've covered for today. Listen to our next episode when that does come out. Please review us, please subscribe us, and definitely let us know how we're doing. We always appreciate feedback, and it gives us areas that we can discuss and topics of discussion that we can bring in with our next episode. And again, if you know where Pucker Tea is from, please tell me.